Welcome to the Players World Kitchen podcast, made in Wrexham and brought to you by Oscar Mayer, the Rugby Players Association and Brand Me. My name is Judith Batchelor and today I have with me in the studio Karis Cox, rugby player, and lots of other things too, which you will hear about as we go through the programme. But before we start, for those of you who don't know Karis, she's currently playing for Ealing Trailfinders women, having previously played for Worcester. She qualifies for Wales internationally and has earned 18 caps for her country, including appearances in this season's Guinness Women's Six Nations. Away from rugby, she holds two first-class degrees in sports science and nursing. She recently transitioned to full-time rugby, having previously juggled, like many players, a playing career with part-time nursing work. Welcome, Karis. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you for having me. It's brilliant to be here.
I'm very excited about our conversation because I know you've done so many things in such a sort of short career, really, in relative terms. But let's start with your rugby career. And how did you get involved in rugby to start with?
I didn't really have a choice, if I'm honest. My dad started off a local tag team in my town called Hungerford. My mum turned out to be the treasurer and then started coaching the under six team. And then my brother started playing as well. So it was whole family out the house every Sunday, you need to join in kind of job. And I fell in love with it from there. Didn't really look back. I played for Berkshire Barbars, under 13s, under 15s, and also played for sort of the Southwest division. And then actually played for England under 18s, sevens, and England under 20s. But Wales was always my sort of passion growing up. You know, my dad's a proud Welshman. I grew up supporting the Welsh team, always had ambitions to play for Wales, but obviously didn't grow up in the system. So then I went to Cardiff University, Cardiff Met first, then Cardiff University, lived in Wales for 8 years. And I got the call in 2023 if I'd like to join the Wales senior squad. And obviously it was an opportunity that I couldn't turn down and was a real dream come true.
Oh, that's fabulous. But, you know, that rugby family, you were from a rugby family, and that must have been, yeah, quite intense at times. Was there lots of rivalry between you?
Yeah, there was, especially in the garden. I mean, we'd play a game called Donkey. I don't know if you know the game called Donkey. It's no. Basically you pass the ball as hard as you can to each other, and if you drop it, then you get a D.
Yeah.
And then O-N-K, and we'd play that every weekend. So, yeah. I won always. Yeah. Always.
Well, bit of a theme there. But yeah, from rugby, and you're now here in the Players' Kitchen and just about to record your episode of the series.
I
mean, what are you going to be cooking for everyone who's going to be watching? But also, how are you feeling about all of that?
So I am cooking chicken and chorizo paella, king prawns, tomato and salted padrons.
Wow.
Yeah, it's very, very exciting. It's a really cool dish. I'm super excited about making it, and it also has like a bit of a home touch with it. My sort of family holiday destination when I was a kid was Menorca. And that's
right,
where I actually found my love for paella. So we'd go every year, and that was my favourite thing to eat when we were out there. And it got to the point where I was like, we need to cook this at home. So I bought my dad a paella dish for the garden.
Oh, right. Okay. So, yeah. Well, it's very special dishes, paella dishes, not just any old
dish. Not any old dish, no. So we have a paella dish for the garden now, and it's one of our family favourites. So obviously, I'm really excited to cook it. Really excited for the end product that could be produced, and obviously it's going to be fit for athletes, and yeah, hopefully it'll be a staple in my diet weekly.
I'm looking forward to it. I have to say, knowing what everyone's going to be cooking is really gets the taste buds going for sure. And outside of obviously cooking for us today and rugby, and you've done lots of other things. I think listening to this program are going to be really interested to hear about, you know, your amazing education, your collection of degrees and your nursing career. Can you expand a bit on all of that?
Yeah, of course. So there's actually quite a few nurses in my family. So my mum's a nurse, my auntie's a nurse, my cousin's an ODP and my other cousin's a nurse. So when I was sort of 18, I thought, oh, I need to avoid healthcare, because I was like, I'm not going to follow the trend of my family of nurses. So I thought, I'm going to go to Cardiff Met and I'm going to do sport and exercise science. Really enjoyed the topic areas and everything like that. And to be fair, I loved the degree. But halfway through, I thought, oh, I think I want to be a nurse. So called my mum, was like, mum, I think I want to be a nurse. And she's obviously over the moon at this point because, you know, that's something that I think she would have loved for me as well. And then I applied for Cardiff University, finished my first degree, and then went to Cardiff to do my nursing, which I kind of knew what was coming. It's not the easiest of degrees, and any other nurse will tell you that. Like, it's 40-hour weeks in hospital, plus your sort of, you know, your dissertations and your outside work. And then obviously I was playing rugby up in Worcester at the same time. So it was a tough 3 years, but it was so rewarding. And then I did, when I qualified, 6 to 8 months working on a ward in Cardiff as well. It was a high care neuro ward.
Nothing lightweight in that at all.
No, it wasn't. But it was my last placement, so it fell in really well that the ward was so supportive with the rugby. So, you know, I had that support system at both rugby and nursing, which made it possible. Like, I don't think that would have been possible unless I'd had those support systems at both. You know, when I played in the Principality against Italy in Six Nations last year, I think I had about 20 nurses come to watch, and they had
fabulous.
A big sign saying,
brilliant.
Nursing
brilliant.
Family. It was an unreal experience. But obviously, it wasn't sustainable because at this point, when I started working, I was then playing in London. So I was working in Cardiff 2 days a week and then traveling down to London and training full-time down there.
That's not sustainable, is it? No.
It wasn't sustainable, unfortunately. But I feel like it set me up for post-rugby now. And it's definitely obviously the profession that I'll go in when I've finished. So, yeah, it was a really rewarding time going through all of that. And, I enjoyed it a lot.
It's interesting you talk about your nursing family like people talk about their rugby family, because there are those similarities. And they always say that, you know, rugby players... because of the nature of the game, have lots of transferable skills. And I think even more so actually in the women's game, because, you know, women have got to be tough, resilient, do the things that you've described. You know, having a job and playing elite rugby is not an easy thing to do. And the men don't have to do that, but the women do. So I think whatever you choose to do, you're going to be set up for that. But there's having those transferable skills, but there's also attitude to these things. You know, what is it about your attitude to, you know, the way you've approached your career that you think has made you so successful?
I think I've always had in my mind that sort of nothing worth having comes easy. And that's always been my attitude. And women in sport have never had it easy. And that's been the hard truth. You know, when we were growing up, like you didn't really have the facilities. You didn't like, you'd go to a sports club and you'd have to get changed in the car because there wasn't changing facilities. Mm. Or, you know, you'd be in a mixed team and that was the normal back then. So we didn't think any differently. But what we have now, like you wouldn't have expected to go through that during that time, you know? So, I mean... I feel like most females in sport have that attitude, and we've all had to work incredibly hard to get here and not give up at every single hurdle that's been faced. So, yeah, I think females in sport right now are paving that way and hopefully creating it sort of pathways for it to be easier for people who were in our shoes back in the day.
Yeah. Yeah, and I can see that because I'm old enough to be able to have seen that progress. But I think everybody just wishes that progress was a bit faster, because sometimes it feels painfully slow. And of course, once you're on a high, that will be, yeah, it'll take off. And of course, having the World Cup here this year is going to be an amazing part of that, because I think it really will be something special. But one of the things that obviously you've got great passion for is travel.
And, yes.
You know, when we were talking earlier, you are a very well-traveled person. So I just wonder, you know, if you could share some of the highlights, because I know you've just been to Peru, for example, but where you've been and what was so amazing about the places that you've been to.
Yeah, of course. It's definitely something that I could talk about for ages. Travel is something that it inspires me, if I'm honest, because you go to places where you experience different cultures, different cuisines, like different ways of life. And like, it really opens your eyes to sort of how lucky we are sometimes. And just some of the scenes, it's like absolutely beautiful. I've obviously just come back from Peru, and the friend that I went with, we said, we've never said wow so many times in our life. Like you'd turn your head and you'd say wow, and you turn your head and you'd say wow.
Wow, yeah.
Because it just looked like a green screen. Like everywhere you looked, you were like, I think I'm looking at something digital right now, because it was just beauty that I hadn't seen before. The culture was absolutely incredible. Like we did a local cooking class.
Oh, did you?
We did, yeah. So we made the sort of sashimi, which was like their raw fish with the curry sauce. And then we made their beef stew. But I'm sure you know that in Peru, their local dish is actually guinea pig.
Yes, yeah. I've been to a guinea pig farm, actually.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So they eat guinea pig and alpaca. So we obviously had to try some of those. And then we did sort of some local dance classes as well.
Oh,
and
wow.
About
really
people who
ring into
this,
the whole.
Yeah. Will know that I'm literally the least coordinated person you will ever meet when it comes to dancing. So it probably wasn't the best thing to witness, but it was, great fun.
Eye-hand coordination with a ball, brilliant.
Yeah. Yes.
Dance moves, not quite so.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely not the same, but.
Yeah. And did you have lots of pisco sours?
Cause, we did. Yeah. And we made them as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were great. Our we went with a group and our group name was actually the Pisco Discos.
It isn't the most fabulous drink, actually. I'd never had it before I went there. So whereabouts did you travel in Peru?
So we started in Cusco. Mm. But we were a bit unaware that obviously it's so high up altitude-wise. So me and my friend turned up pretty unaware and everyone was like, we've been on altitude sickness tablets for a week or so. And we said, we've got some paracetamol. So it took a while to adjust to that. But we were in Cusco and then we went to Olawantu. And then we caught the train to Machu Picchu, climbed up Machu Picchu, came back down. And then we did Rainbow Mountain at the end as well. But some very cool stuff in between that. We mountain biked down Sacred Valley.
Oh, wow. Gosh, that's... Yeah.
I did fall off.
Yeah, not surprised.
Don't tell my physio.
Yeah. No, I mean, but stunning scenery.
Yeah, absolutely stunning.
One of your wow moments. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then we did some local pottery classes with the locals. And so it was very sort of a personal trip. And they made sure that you got to see stuff that you wouldn't have done if you'd probably traveled on your own. So yeah, it was a really, really eye-opening and an exciting trip. And yeah, it's made me want to do a bit more of South America, that's for sure. Yeah.
And other trips that you've done, you know, that they're in the memory bank of special moments?
I've done quite a lot of Asia and Malaysia. I went to the Philippines last year and travelled around that. And we did a bit of island hopping and a bit of scuba diving there, where we went to see the thresher sharks, which was...
Wow.
A very, very cool experience. And then the year before that, we went to Komodo, which I didn't really know existed, but luckily we've got a bit of family there.
Oh, so, wow. Strange place.
Strange place.
To have family.
Exactly. Yeah. And we went to see the Komodo dragons and they had these incredible pink beaches where, the sand's pink, the waters are just crystal blue. Again, another thing that you'd probably think, oh, well, this is digital, because it's absolutely incredible. And then we did a bit of Thailand and Bali as well, which again is just an incredible place. So
incredible
every trip,
food as well.
Yeah. Oh, the food in Thailand is probably one of my favorite places I've been for food, because it's incredible, isn't it?
Tasty, fragrant,
and
tasty.
Yeah. But yeah, they've all been incredible trips. And it's probably just made me eager to go again every time I go to somewhere new. So it's a bit of a fix now, addiction.
So where's next on the itinerary?
I would love to do Nepal.
Yeah, wow.
And I'd love to do Patagonia. So they're kind of the next two ideas, obviously opposite ends. But whenever we get some next free time, I think we've already started planning
on that.
Well,
that's the challenge, isn't it? At this point in your career, it's so intense.
Exactly.
Finding those moments.
Yeah, exactly. It's just any time that we have a bit of free time now and it fits in with the training regime and stuff like that, I go. And they're normally quite active trips. So you don't feel too guilty going either, because you're hiking biking or what I mean?
Hopefully staying on your bike.
Yeah.
Oh, good for you.
But yeah, no, absolutely great fun. And I'd recommend it to anyone, really.
Oh, well, I'm sure people listening to this are thinking, I'm inspired to travel to some of these places and to eat the food, but also you might get lots of, get lots of offers. Just to change the subject slightly, I suppose one of the things that fascinates me in any sector, whether it's sport or business, and particularly women working in environments that are male-dominated environments, and there are plenty of them still, is how, and if actually, other women help other women. Because I think women helping women is a very powerful thing, particularly if they've been through some of those challenges themselves. Who are the memorable women that have helped you on your journey?
There's been a lot, to be fair, and I think daily I feel lucky for the teams that I play with as well. The, you know, at Ealing, all the girls are incredible. At Wales, all the girls are incredible. But to name some people in particular, Jo Yap was my coach at under 20s, and she was also my Worcester coach for 6 seasons.
She's a bit of a legend, isn't she?
She's an absolute legend. Australia are so lucky to have her right now.
Yeah.
She just understood the players so well, and helped them on such a personal and professional level. Like I said, obviously I was juggling nursing at the time, and she was so understanding, but she also made such a difference in my rugby career. She was probably the person that's had the most impact, I would say, on my career so far in relation to sort of my playing ability. But also other people, Giselle Mather, she was someone, obviously when Worcester went into liquidation and folded, she was someone who took quite a few of us Worcester girls into Ealing and gave us a premiership club to carry on our careers. And she was also so personable and professional at the same time, and, you know, really helped us out in a time of need. And then just another mention is to my secondary school teachers. They were incredible, to be fair. They, you know, pushed me in every single sport possible, and they were so supportive. They come to games now as well.
Oh, do they? Yeah, brilliant.
They've come to some international games, and they still keep up to date with all the progress that's being made, and they're such advocates for women's sport. So, yeah, I'm super, super happy and proud to have met them.
Oh. Well, you know, I'm sure they're feeling the same way and proud to be part of your journey. And yeah, we've got the Women's World Cup here. And I suppose more generally, people talk about the fact that, is this going to be our Lionesses moment? You know, is this going to do for women's rugby what the Lionesses did for women's football? I mean, what are your hopes for the future of the women's game?
I think this is a massive opportunity this year, and I think everyone's kind of feeling the same. I think the event's going to be absolutely incredible regardless. The sport is growing, and the amount of spectators that we're seeing, the amount of funding, the amount of media coverage, the amount of involvement is growing. But I think this will have the biggest impact on how quickly that accelerates. And like we've said, it's been pretty slow. But I'm hoping after this World Cup, you're going to see that growth increase. And the speed of that. I think people will come and watch the games that have never watched the sport before, and I think they're going to get hooked, because that's the kind of stories that we've been hearing before. Like, people don't know about women's rugby, or they haven't been to a women's rugby game, and they suddenly go to one and they're like, oh, this is great. And like, this is so fun to watch. And like, the skill level's great, the speed's great, the athletes are great, the support around. And they were saying about the sort of demographic that come to watch it now, and it's quite a lot of families and kids and, you know, women in sport.
It's a very different vibe, isn't it?
It's a very different vibe. So, you know, we've got a massive audience to reach, and, you know, I think that's going to be incredible.
I think it's funny, actually, you've talked to people who don't watch women's rugby, and they have some very stereotypical views of it. You know, which I won't mention because they're just, you know, they're not worth mentioning.
Yeah.
But when they do actually go and watch it, I mean, they are just gobsmacked by, it's almost a different game, isn't it? I mean,
yeah,
you know it, you play it.
Yeah. But people compare it to sort of the men's game 20, 30 years ago. You know, it's slightly less structured. It's faster.
Oh, much faster.
You see more line breaks, you see more tries. You know, it's a really exciting game to watch. And I think it's only going to get better, if I'm honest. Like, the more teams are getting contracted, more girls are going full time. Like, with that, the game's just going to get better and better and better. And the crowd's going to get bigger. The hype around it's going to get even bigger than it already is. So it's such an exciting time to be part of. Yeah.
Yeah.
Makes me smile a lot.
Yeah, no, well, it does. And it makes, when you talked about the crowds that come and watch women's rugby and more families, and it is a very different audience for the game. But that's the beauty of it, isn't it? Because the game is now reaching people that it wouldn't have reached, because those people would not go and watch men's rugby. Those families wouldn't go together.
Yeah, exactly. It's a whole avenue that hasn't been explored. And like, that's probably a market that hasn't been touched yet, because not many families as a group would want to go see professional sport because of maybe crowds or, you know, the sort of nature around it and stuff like that. But this is, women's rugby is a place for that. And it's it's a great place.
Well, anything that grows the game in total, men's and women's game, because people are just interested in it, is a good thing. And I think particularly you and your colleagues are amazing role models for young girls. And I remember doing some research a few years ago about the number of girls, particularly teenage girls, who drop out of active sport and never go back to it. So if you stop being active you know, in a team sport or an individual sport in your teens, then you rarely go back to it as an adult. Yep. And that's a real shame.
It is, so, for so many reasons. Like we've just said about how many of those skills are transferable to work and mental health and stuff like that. And that's why I feel so lucky to have rugby in my life, is it really shaped me and it's really, you know, pushed me into places that I probably wouldn't have pushed myself. And
well, you wouldn't be sitting here, would you?
I would not. I wouldn't be sitting here without it. So I'm really grateful for the sport, to be fair.
And if you think about those pathways, of course, you know, the fact that when I was at school, girls didn't play football or rugby, although I played football because my father played football. But at least now those pathways are going to be available to girls who want to play football, and perhaps not so much rugby, but those opportunities will come, I'm sure.
Yeah, for sure. And even just the level of involvement is obviously substantially different to when we played. Like we had to combine 3 different clubs to make a team when I was in Berkshire. So that's why we were called Berkshire Barbars, but it was Newbury, Maidenhead and Reading. So we'd combine 3 teams to make our one team, whereas all of those clubs are fielding 4 teams now and sometimes first and seconds.
Wow.
So it's a different game completely. And like the involvement and participation is gone through the roof. So
like, that is amazing.
It's incredible. It's really incredible.
Because that's not a long period of time, you know.
No, 10 years.
Yeah.
So... yeah, and you're seeing girls' clubs from under 10s, under 8s, even when they can join males, you're seeing just female-owned clubs, which is, you know, we didn't get that till we were under 13. So, yeah,
brilliant.
It's incredible to see.
Yeah, all right. Bodes well for the future.
It does. Yeah, it really does.
So come back to the food piece again, and this is a bit sort of like desert island discs. But you're just about to be marooned on a desert island. You're thinking about, you know, I can take one last big meal with me and a drink. What would that be?
This is such a tough question because there's so many foods I would choose. Yeah. I'd probably have to go like a baked camembert with like a red onion chutney, some fresh sourdough bread as the starter. And then main. See, if it was just like a last meal, but I wasn't going to eat for ages, I'd probably go for some Thai food. But if this was my last meal ever, I'd probably want to go for something quite dirty. So it would probably be like a massive pizza loaded in meats with all the sauces and some like dirty fries on the side or something.
Wow.
Yeah.
And if you were... going to survive on this desert island and you were going to have a Thai meal, what would that be?
Probably a Penang curry, coconut rice or a Thai green. Either of those, that I could eat that all the time as well. It's definitely one of my favourite meals. So that would be a hard choice. I just don't think a Thai green would fill me up enough.
Yeah.
You know, that's what my predicament is.
That's what the pizza and the dirty fries is all
exactly.
about.
Exactly. I want to be full if it's going to be my last meal.
Yeah.
And then dessert, I would probably go Nam's apple crumble, but with an almond croissant as a side.
And what's special about the apple crumble?
The crumble is sorry, you won't be able to see it, but the crumble to apple ratio is all crumble, no apple. So basically a bowl of crumble. Oh, with custard and ice cream.
Custard and ice cream.
Yeah, hot custard and a cold scoop of vanilla ice cream. And then obviously, an almond croissant. I don't think I could go without having an almond croissant. It would have to be on the menu.
Comfort food and
they're just delicious every Sunday.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. And then drink would probably have to be a Savvy B.
Right.
Yeah. Sauvignon Blanc. It's definitely mine and my mum's favourite wine.
It's go-to grape.
Go-to grape, New Zealand, Sauvignon Blanc, Savvy B.
Fortunately, you're not going to be marooned on a desert island and you won't be able to take your 3-course meal and glass of Sauvignon Blanc with you. But thank you for being here today. Thank you for having me. Being so generous and sharing your stories, which I know our listeners will love to hear. And all the very best in the World Cup, but more importantly, right now, all the very best in the Players' World Kitchen. I'm sure you're going to be amazing. I love what you're going to be cooking. I mean, Padron peppers are one of my all-time favourites. So yeah, I shall be looking out for that later. So thank you. And if you have enjoyed this discussion, and I hope you've enjoyed the discussion, I certainly have, Karis, thank you. Then please join us next week to hear more from our cooking guests. So goodbye from both of us from Wrexham.